Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly visit together. And because I have often said, and will often say it again, I have my whole life been surrounded by beautiful and strong women. And one of them is with me today. And that is my daughter, Gina. And so, Gina Mina, to make sure that you are on the board, it is over to you to deliver greetings to Captain Joe's people all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden, of which Stockholm is the capital, on the other.
Okay, well, welcome to all of Captain Joe's people from Singapore to Sweden.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done. As you will recall, I told you that we never rehearse, and we clearly did not rehearse that. So my greetings today go out to, first of all of Captain Joe's people who sent me signals when it became clear that last week's broadcast did not get recorded. I hear from you very quickly when we have technical problems with the voice. And sometimes in dismay, sometimes in disappointment, but I always hear from you one way or the other. And so Captain O'Brien has assured me that all of this is being recorded this very minute, so that those of you who are not able to listen to me on Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band and stream live all over the world on voiceofvashon.org will be able to hear me. The second group of people, I am sending my greetings out to all Canadians. I am related by marriage to half of Canada, and I am related in other ways to the other half. I have worked with French Canadian icebreaker captains in Montreal and Quebec City, and so my signal that goes out to all Canadians all over the world is to take an even strain, lie back on the hawser just a little bit. All will be well. Know that my love, my respect, my regard, and my affection for all Canadians, is complete. And I am in particular reminded of the years that I was the commander in Sault Ste. Marie on the Michigan side of the border. And we essentially had no border there. We went back and forth between each other's side of the border and both the American Sioux and the Canadian Sioux. I had a couple of Canadian Sioux employees who worked for me in the base of which I was the commander. And I have today a number of family members who never acquired U.S. citizenship. They have green cards. So for all of you out there who are Canadians, Americans of Canadian descent, Canadians of American descent, know that my love and regard and respect for you all remains even higher than it's ever been, and we together will get through all of this. Gina, didn't you and Laurie go camping up in Canada when you came to visit me there?
Why, yes, we did. Funny you should bring that up, because you like to bring this story up.
I do, yes, yes.
Since this is where I lost the gas cap to the Jeep,
yes,
which when the Jeep was handed over, very specifically the instructions were, whatever you do, do not lose the gas cap.
Yes, yes, so those were the instructions.
Those were. So somewhere in Canada probably still exists this gas cap, but I will say that we camped and it was the best camping experience we've had because the fire pits were all set. The wood was all set. It was clean. It was beautiful. You guys did a great job.
Yes. Yes, and that gas cap is still up there.
It's still there.
I hope somebody found it and is making good use of it. I resuscitate that story ad nauseum because it's one of my favorite stories of inattention to duty by somebody that I thought I had educated to be full of attention to duty. The Binnacle List today has a couple of sad entries. So last week, I talked a little bit about my friend here on the island, Bob Dixon, the Navy veteran who, to me, was Dixie Bob. And this week, one of my Academy classmates has crossed the bar. That doesn't leave many of us left. And in fact, yesterday I had a phone call from one of my other Academy classmates, and he was giving me the catalog of all of the things that were going wrong or had gone wrong with him and from which he had recovered. And it made my own situation pale, his situation so much worse than mine. And that's true of so many of Captain Joe's people who are on the Binnacle List. So quickly, not only have I lost a good and dear island friend, but also one of my Academy classmates from over 70 years ago. My friend Steve, who is dealing with serious cancer problems. And I'm also going to put His Holiness the Pope and His Majesty King Charles III. All of you Master Chiefs out there that are dealing with really serious things. And in my own case, I am not just holding my own, but I am always of good cheer. Gina Mina may not think that that's necessarily... Do you think that I'm doing pretty well in terms of good cheer?
I have to say, really surprisingly so. Yes.
Surprisingly? Why are you saying surprisingly?
I guess relative to how most other people would respond to it.
Ah, that's a better answer.
Yes.
So for all of you Captain Joe's people who are on the Binnacle List, know that as always you are in the palm of my hand. Know that you are close to my heart. And for all of you, the concerted good wishes of all of my people who listen to this broadcast are now coming to you in concentrated beams of light and will help you get through and get back to full duty. It's lovely to have you sitting across from me, Gina.
To be here.
So, picking up on a couple things that were in last week's broadcast but did not get put on the archive, the SS United States has now arrived in Mobile. The tug that pulled her down from Philadelphia all the way through the Florida Straits and into the port of Mobile was a great success and was handled in the most professional way by the tug captain that towed her, and she is now alongside. There is a wonderful photograph of her with being saluted by the cruise ship Utopia of the Seas. And if there was ever a demonstration of what a ship really should look like and what a ship should not look like, United States is the perfect example of an absolutely beautiful ship. I remarked last week that she is almost, but not quite, as beautiful as my own Ingham, our Ingham, for all of my Ingham shipmates who are listening to the broadcast today. And what a ship should not look like is Utopia of the Seas. First of all, a very cumbersome name, and secondly, a very cumbersome ship, and I would not want to try to take her through a Pacific typhoon or an Atlantic hurricane. So that if you can go on to YouTube, there I've mentioned that much loathed name, which I always use, and you can see that photograph of the two of them together, and you'll get an idea of what your captain believes what a ship should look like and then what one would not look like. Tomorrow is Ash Wednesday. And Ash Wednesday, for those of the Christian faith, is, and in particular those of the Roman Catholic persuasion within the Christian faith, is the day when their foreheads are touched with ashes. And the ashes come from the burning of the palms that are left over from the previous Easter's Palm Sunday. And those of the Roman Catholic persuasion will not be surprised that at the description, but for those of you who are not, and you see your friends, colleagues, shipmates around with a little gray or black smudge on their forehead tomorrow, it is because they have been to a Catholic church and they have had their foreheads touched with the ashes from the palms. And this is just to remind us that all of us are going to return at one time or another, sooner or later. In the case of your Captain Joe, hopefully much later, we're going to return to the ashes of the earth. It also marks the beginning of the Lent season. And so 40 days of Lent until we get to Easter Sunday.
Is that when you give up something?
That's when you are supposed to give up something. I have given up walking swiftly. And I've had to give that up because I don't have any choice about it. But or I have, I'm trying to figure out how I can say this delicately. I've given up draining down in the normal way and am still connected to the external plumbing. Mm-hmm. That's what I've given up. Mm-hmm. But
Let me just throw in, I think maybe you've given up on that bicycle, that stationary bicycle that's parked in your garage. I think you've given up on that, Dad.
No, I haven't. I've not given up. Oh. I'm letting it meditate.
Oh, okay. Okay. My mistake.
Yeah. I'm letting it meditate. But you're right. My walking would probably benefit greatly from my going back out there. While you and Bob are here, maybe you could go out and check it out and make sure that it is working properly.
Maybe we could.
Maybe you could do that for me, yeah. And then come and report back.
A full report.
Yeah. So we've talked about United States. We've talked about Ash Wednesday. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Panama Canal. And I'm going to tell a story about the Panama Canal.
Oh, a story.
So the... there's a lot of interest in America these days as to whether or not we either take back the Panama Canal or we start to operate it ourselves. And I'm not going to get into the middle of either the politics or the international repercussions of that. I'm going to tell a story of one of my own transits through the Panama Canal. I may have told that story on this broadcast before, and if I have, and you've already heard it, then just make a head call or do whatever you want. But I'm going to tell it anyway because, after all, it's my broadcast and I get to put anything that I want on it. And it was this. So I was making a transit from the Atlantic side to the Pacific side. I was taking my much-loved north wind through the Panama Canal en route Hawaii, and from Hawaii we were going to Wellington, New Zealand, and from there to Antarctica. And I, of course, had to take a Panama Canal pilot. Now, I've talked a little bit about my relationship with pilots in different parts of the world, and it was almost always either an ambivalent relationship or not always the best. I never liked having somebody else on my bridge who thought that they knew more about my ship than I did. And yet I drew a Panama Canal pilot who believed that. And so in our discussions of different qualifications and what we had done, it turns out that this pilot, this was before we had turned the canal over to the Panamanians, this pilot was an American. And the highest license that he held was as a second mate. In those days, Panama Canal pilot did not have to have been a captain or a master, had never sailed on his license. So the highest he had been was a second mate. So he'd never commanded anything. And we are going heading into the first set of locks. And this was before I had taken Northwind up into the Great Lakes, where my experience with locks in the Great Lakes was such that I could have written a pilot's exam for the St. Mary's River and the locks and Lake Superior. And so I was not as experienced with working a ship of any size, and Northwind was big and heavy, and I'd never had any experience. But the Panama Canal, the aids to navigation there are beautifully maintained. You can go through at night and everything is lighted, even Calibre Cut. And so I was saying, once I'd learned that this pilot had never commanded anything himself, and yet I had to turn the control of my ship over to him. And I said, pilot, this looks to me like a relatively simple navigation problem. I don't see how difficult it is. I'm saying this from having, for example, taken my Ingham when I was both XO and captain in her into many, many different places in the world, and I had taken her in and put her into places where I only had a few feet on either end. So I was pretty confident, in fact, cocky, I think might be a better word, of my ship handling skills and ship handling abilities and my navigational skills. I said, pilot, this seems to me to be a relatively simple and straightforward navigational problem. Well, pilot was, he took the bait on that one, and he looked at me, and I'm sitting up in the captain's chair, and XO had the con and was taking the ship through all of the navigational challenges. And he looked up at me, and he said, captain, there are hidden lurking currents that only pilots know about right near those locks. And that's why you need to take a pilot. Well, the relationship between us got frosty at that point, remained frosty through the entire transit. He was happy to see the stern of my big red icebreaker as I put her alongside and on the Pacific side, in the port on the Pacific side, where the tidal range, by the way, can be as much as 30 feet. It's really something. And I was happy to see the ample stern of that Panama Canal pilot. And it was only then that pilots redeemed themselves by the one that I had in Wellington, about whom I have told a couple of stories.
How long does it take to get through the Panama Canal?
It takes a day.
Okay.
It takes a day, and you have to go into an anchorage and wait until it's your turn to go through. And unlike in the Suez Canal, where they go through by convoy, they line up a whole string of ships that go through all at one time, because you can only go one way in the Suez Canal. In the Panama Canal, you go through as individual ships, and you have a pace you have to keep up, 12, 15 knots, depending on what the pilot wants you to do. And there are no places to pull over to the side and park. Once you get going, you have to keep going. So it can take a day to get through, and it is incredibly interesting. There was an author in the 1930s named Richard Halliburton, and he swam through the Panama Canal, and he got locked up and down. And there is a book that he wrote that has photographs of him in the lock chambers in the Panama Canal. It's an amazing piece of engineering. And the Panamanians, since it has been theirs, have expanded the locks on the Pacific side. Our biggest carriers cannot go through. They're far too big to go through. And so that's why we have carriers that are stationed here on the Pacific side and on the Atlantic side. And if they ever have to swap, they'll have to go all the way around Cape Horn through the Straits of Magellan. And boy, that will be a real trick and a half with a Nimitz class or a Gerald Ford class carrier. I'd love to make that trip whenever they have to do it. I don't have a pilot's license for the Straits of Magellan. I've got two magazines instead of a book and a magazine this week. And the first one is called The Cutter, and it is the newsletter for the Foundation for Coast Guard History. When I was at one of our reunions, the executive director was at the meeting, and Commander Gary Thomas, and Commander Thomas convinced me, it didn't take much convincing, but he convinced me that I should take out a membership in the Foundation for Coast Guard History. He was exactly right. And so I became a life member, which means that I get the print version of the newsletter. And I thought, well, this is just a rehash of maybe some things that we already know about. And I could not have been more wrong. And there, Gina Mina, I am confessing error.
I was almost speechless for a moment.
Yes, I knew you were. I could see you sitting over there being almost speechless. I confess error because there is some wonderful new information in here, a story that I knew nothing. And it goes like this. The Revenue Cutter Service, which was founded in 1790 and was the name for the Coast Guard, now we call it the Coast Guard, but it's the same service, back in 1837, was directed by the commander-in-chief to do winter cruising. And so the cutters would get underway in the wintertime, and they would cruise all the way from the Canadian border up north all the way down to South Carolina. And they would be looking for ships that were in distress. And so the story that is in there, it's called The Revenue Cutter Service, Its Work in the Relief of Vessels in Distress. And as I read through this thing, and I was just amazed at the number of rescues that these ships rendered in this period. And there is a whole section here called Some Typical Rescues by the Revenue Cutters. And if there was anything that made my search and rescue grommet clench up, it is some of these stories. Just incredible stories of seamanship of the highest type. So that's called The Cutter. It is the newsletter for the Foundation for Coast Guard History. And those of you who are interested in Coast Guard history could well become a member for the Foundation for Coast Guard History. The second magazine is The Professional Mariner. And in this one, I confess this month to a considerable amount of disappointment. Usually I look in this for articles that have to do, first of all, with the marine casualties, because some of the marine casualties that I talk about are covered in The Professional Mariner. And so this one is had an article called Training Ice Pilots in Virtual Reality. And I thought, well, now somebody has figured out how they can replicate in a computer and in a trainer, a simulator, working in the ice. And it turns out that what I had suspected is actually true, that the only way that you can really do this is just the same way as you can only learn how to handle a ship in a typhoon or in a hurricane, or as my English friends say, hurricane, is to actually do it, is actually to get into it and to be in the survival situation where you and your skills are being put to work to survive, not just to accomplish the mission, but just to survive. And I can tell you that both in the typhoon and in the hurricane situation on the Atlantic side, that I have done those things. And so I'm reading this article. And if there was ever three or four pages of trying to baffle with BS, this one is it. So here is a quote. This is the kind of stuff that's in this article. The quality of the geo databases depends on the data of the available source, which varies around the world. Now, if there was ever a self-evident truth, that is it. And it goes on to say, the simulator system also features live AIS vessel traffic. Now, AIS is the system that tracks all vessels. And it goes on and on and on with things that even the most novice seafarer can see for himself. So I'm disappointed in the Professional Mariner this week, and I am not recommending that anybody go to their local newsstand and buy a copy, because if you want to read about ice, then go to books like Ice Is Where You Find It by Captain Charles Thomas, or go to South, which is Shackleton's own account of his time in the ice, and especially his own account of bringing all of his people to safety after Endurance had sunk. The next Navy secretary is neither a person who has served, a person who has had anything to do with the Navy. He is an entrepreneur, and he's right now, his concern is with the rust level on Navy ships. Now, Mr. Secretary, I submit to you that is a problem with the captains and the XOs and the first lieutenants, and that you need not bother yourself with it. I can show you how you motivate those captains and XOs and first lieutenants to get rid of that rust. There's a reason why Coast Guard cutters are white. Most of them are white. Some are black. Those are the work ships like the buoy tenders. And some are red like those that work in the ice. But most of them are white. And every rust streak shows itself immediately. And that means that every captain, when he comes aboard in the morning, is looking at his ship. And he's getting hold of XO. And he says, there's just a little piece of rust that's beginning to show up forward by frame number 35. Aye, aye, Captain. I'll take care of that. It won't happen again. So, Gina Mina, we're coming to the end of our time together.
Oh.
And I would like you to deliver yourself of something that you would like to say to Captain Joe's people all over the world, because it's been a pleasure having you sit across from me. The time that we are able to spend together are always golden. And so this is your chance. If there's anything that you would like to say about, you're a hiker. Yeah.
Yes.
That's one thing you could.
Okay. Okay.
So you've got 30 seconds.
Okay, here we go. Actually, I don't want to address my hiking. I want to say that I know the heart that my dad puts into these episodes, and what you all individually mean to him. So I say thank you for your love and support and listening to this program. And I hope for all of you that you continue to treat each other with great kindness. We need that right now. And that you are all well.
So, lovely. Thank you, darling. I I appreciate that. I really do appreciate that, because that is the theme of this broadcast and my mission, and that is to make everybody feel just a little bit better about themselves and about the world in which we live when we come to the end of this half hour that we spend together all over the world. So this is your Captain Joe. I am up in the captain's chair. I am of good cheer. I am in full command of all of those things at which I am still able to command. And as always, I am on station and watching properly. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again.